I'm Michael Heyman, and you're listening to Changemakers. Now, my guest today is Kim Pohlman, co-founder and chair of Reboot the Future, the foundation aimed at transforming how people connect to themselves, each other, and the planet. Its work is powered by one key golden rule, and that is to treat others and the planet as you would wish to be treated. Kim describes this call to action as the only universal principle the world shares and uses it as a roadmap for the conversations and campaigns that will lead to a more sustainable world. Kim, welcome to Changemakers.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Michael. I'm greatly honored to be here.
Oh, well, I'm thrilled to have you on the show. You and I, we were talking just off air. You and I met some years ago. And of course, the world was a very different place, but I guess the world was then and now influenced by a golden rule. So why don't we start with that idea in terms of your thoughts, your ideas, and I guess what that offers people for the future?
Well, I think that if more people had been living the golden rule, we maybe wouldn't be in the big pickle that we're in right now. That's for sure. The golden rule is such an amazing principle. It's so simple, but yet it's very, very profound. Simple to remember and understand. I think it's something that we probably all hear as children from our mothers or our fathers. You know, how many times were we told as children not to hit someone because we don't like to be hit? But then we forget about it and mothers stop talking about it. And so, but it is really a basic, very basic universal principle that is deeply historical. It's all around the world. In fact, it's at the root of all religions. In fact, it is really the core of being human. In fact, it's the core of being a mammal. I've been reading a lot of books about animals, and there's a beautiful one called Becoming Wild by Carl Safina, and he goes into the cultures of these animals and how they take care of each other. And, you know, even in tribal times, the survival was based on taking care of yourself, but also your community.
Yeah. Why are we doing such a bad job of it? Do you think? I mean, I'm just sort of thinking, I mean, you're right. I mean, that was a key thing that I can remember growing up. You know, you treat others as you would treat yourself. I mean, it's sort of, but when you look around the world, when you look at the world's problems, I mean, it's clear that something's going badly wrong on that front, isn't it?
Yes, for sure. But that's also because we are taught to be competitive, and competition is good, because then we strive to be our best or to find the best product or whatever. But it's also can become very, very negative force, where we stop sharing and it becomes selfish and we become arrogant. And then, you know, then you you want more and more and more of it. So we haven't found the balance between that deeply innate part of us, which is to care, versus this competitive attitude that we're taught, school days, sports, when we're doing sports, all of these things, and how much language in business is about is using sports analogies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, competitive advantage, all of that. But presumably, I mean, it was interesting that you used the word balance. So you're not saying either or, you're saying you need both, do you?
Yeah, balance is a really big thing that is out of whack in our modern day. We did a reboot at Reboot the Future. We did with a couple of partners, a whole series of conversations in the first year of COVID online in different sectors of the economy. So we did arts one and finance, education. And then that resulted in a whole list of values that we pulled out of these conversations. And one of them was that kept coming up all the time in all of these different sectors was balance. Mm-hmm. It was really astonishing. We're just not in balance with nature, you know, urban, rural areas, the balance in our lives, the balance, you know, all the stress that we have in our society, in our jobs, and jobs are at our corporations are asking people to behave in a way that is against their own set of values. So just all kinds of things. Our whole agricultural food system is out of balance.
I'd add, I mean, you know, when I look at the lockdown lists of guests that I've interviewed in the past, one of the biggest common themes is the ambition, the real hope that a life in balance is achievable. And I suppose that comes down to happiness, and it comes back to a sense of what we are as people. And you mentioned parents, and I was interested that in your lockdown list, you described your mum as your biggest inspiration, because she loved so fully for 95 years and sprinkled happy dust on everyone that she met. Tell us about her and how that inspired you and I guess your worldview today.
Well, she was just a wonderful mother. We lost her a year ago.
Sorry to hear that.
That's okay. We were so grateful that we had her for so many years. She just, like I said, sprinkled happy dust, and the letters that we received from people were all, everybody mentioned this about her. She just radiated joy, and she loved everybody and was always eager and curious about everybody and appreciated everything and everyone. So that recently is a big goal of mine. I don't think I can ever live the same kind of joy she had, but it is definitely a goal of mine to be more joyous all the time. And that comes from a deep sense of gratitude for everything. Even in our darkest moments, there's always a silver lining somewhere. There's something that we can learn, some joy, some spark that we can be grateful for.
Do you find that there is a technique, because you know you have to dig deep to find that silver lining, I think, you know, because not in every sense. I'm thinking about, you know, we lost my own sister-in-law to cancer, and it was a dreadful moment. We're almost at the 2-year anniversary, and I still struggle with the sense of the silver lining. But I also love the fact that, you know, when you talk about the three requirements for the golden rule, they're empathy, courage, and action. And I think that, you know, this was Lorraine, my sister-in-law, as a person, and you know how it affects people and how they can find the silver lining. For those that want to do that, for those that want to search for it, what's your advice to them in how to find it?
Well, I think just the very fact that we are going through something and then we get out of it. We do get through it. We've learned something about ourselves. And we certainly have learned something about the person that, if in your case, what your sister went through. And I'm sure you had a lot of observations and you got to know her, a side of her that you probably never saw. And I, having lost my father and now my mother, I have their a little photo up on my screen, on my computer, on my desktop. So I see them all the time. They're always there. You know, we have our memories, and I think we appreciate someone even more after they're gone. Mm-hmm. And that's a silver lining.
That is a silver lining, a memory, I guess.
The memory is, and we remember more clearly why we loved them. And in that sense, I almost feel like my father was much more with me than when I was alive. When he was still alive, we lived far apart for a very long time, so I wasn't used to having him physically there. But I remember going through the process of what did I really love about my dad, and what did I really love about my mom, and that just I carry that. Mm. That doesn't go away.
When you look at the world that we're living in today, a world that has got huge stresses on it in terms of its own future from a planet and sustainability perspective, a world that has struggled with a pandemic, and now a world which, you know, is watching an indescribable war in the Ukraine. It strikes me that a big part of your message for Reboot the Future does require hope. And it does require a sense that we can create a better tomorrow. What sustains that when you look at not a hopeful world right now, but in some respects, a hopeless world in terms of a complete lack of hope on many fronts right now?
Well, you're absolutely right. It is a really, really big challenge. My entire life, I have believed in the power of good to overcome evil. I have a very large sense of infinite love. It's just all around us, you know, the old song, love makes the world go round. And I've always believed that. And I don't think evil can last forever. I just really don't. It eventually self-destructs. The really unfortunate part that is that, you know, a few rotten individuals can do an awful lot of damage. in the process, and that is just so painful to watch, what especially is going on right now. Of course, everyone is guilty of the climate change, of the excesses that we've lived in, of an economic system that was based on extraction and exploitation, and that's just been a huge systemic issue, and we all have to be part of that solution. It is a challenge, but I do want to hold firmly on to that, and there is still so much beauty. I do believe in the power of nature to, I don't even think recovery is the right word, because we won't be able to go back. The world will not go back to the way it was.
Mm-hmm.
We're on this trajectory of enormous change, but nature just stays existing. It's always been, you know, since the first bacteria.
Well, I mean, I want to get onto imaginal cells, but before that, I suppose a lot of what you're saying is also about, I mean, you're right, nature endures, nature is there 24 hours of every day. I suppose as people, it's how do we connect with that? How do we find that deeper sense of connection, which I know is a big part of your theory of change, and indeed the kind of the imaginal cells. I mean, let's put, instead of me ruining the description, why, Kim, why don't you tell us about it and why it matters in your view?
The story of the imaginal cell.
Yeah, sure.
The metaphor. Right. So the imaginal cell is really the innate cell in the caterpillar that holds the vision of the butterfly. And so for us, this whole transformation is inspirational and really directs what we do. So the caterpillar in his life eats and eats and gorges and gorges and overconsumes, like we have been overconsuming. He goes into his cocoon and starts to decay. So our world is really in this chaotic state right now. Out of this come this innate imaginal cell. This chaos actually activates this cell. The imaginal cell is the correct biological pronunciation. So each of there's several of these, and they have different identities. The leg, the antenna, the wing, whatever. And they are become activated, but the old way of doing things doesn't like it and starts attacking them. But the imaginal cells, they emit a common frequency and they find each other and cluster to cluster. And then that the old way gives up. And then that allows the new way to actually develop and grow. And then out comes this beautiful butterfly. So what I see now going on is this old way of doing things in conflict with this new way of doing things. And even though this golden rule has been around for centuries and millennia, actually, we have this technology now for everybody at the same time to understand this as this beautiful basis for living, and which is unique. Technology has, you know, been impeded us to all understand this at once. So we want to get, you know, more and more people aware of this so that we can get to that tipping point.
Well, I was going to ask also, because you turned this theory into a book, and it's been described as a thought-provoking anthology looking at how a compassionate approach to business, politics, and the environment can transform. I mean, some incredible essays, Al Gore, Muhammad Yunus, late Desmond Tutu, your husband, Paul Polman. What did you learn from that experience in terms of, I suppose, people that were traveling a similar road, perhaps from different perspectives, but believed in the idea of good prevailing, that there were forces for good in the world? I'm interested in actually when you go through an experience like that, because I co-authored a book, Mission, is that it tends to change you, the very act of writing something. What did you learn about your ideas and yourself in the process of writing your own book?
Oh, it was an incredible learning experience for me, because I really had to delve into the golden rule and learn about it. I had grown up thinking it was a Christian thing, but in fact, Jesus just copied, you know, from Buddha and from Confucius and all these others. And then Muhammad came later, and you know, so it was that was really a revelation to me. And then we were working on this at the same time as the SDGs, and when the Sustainable Development Goals mm-hmm. work concluded in 2015. And the point of the book really was to show that the Golden Rule was applicable not only to just human relationships and kindness and this kind of thing, which is really important, but it really applies to the issues. So for example, if this issue of modern day slavery, you know, if you don't want to be a slave, then how could you possibly have slaves in your supply chain?
Mm-hmm.
That's just a basic example. And then indigenous cultures, you know, so many people nowadays in the modern world feel threatened by immigration, and they think their culture is going to be diluted, and you know, their traditional ways threatened. Well, you know, immigration has been going on since day one.
But there does seem to be this thing about, can we ever learn from history? I mean, how do we actually stop making our mistakes? Because I was thinking, you know, the sort of people that you worked with on the book, I mean, obviously they've lived highly successful lives and they have inspired new generations that are coming into ascendancy now, a new generation that meets and, you know, sort of, we were talking about things like forums like One Young World and others, and hopes to get it right where others have got it wrong. How do you feel about the chances of a new generation to do something different, perhaps, than those that have gone before them?
Well, we've certainly had a step back in, you know, the recent invasion of Ukraine. And I think the whole world is shocked that this is happening right now in such a blatant way. One would have hoped that kind of era would be over. But if you look at the whole history of mankind, if you read history, we really have progressed. Most, you know, there's an individual right now who has not, but, you know, there is this progression going back and forth, but it's always more steps forward than back. So I'm part of this evolutionary leaders group who looks at evolution, accepts, you know, the evolution of physical, our physical evolution, which has been going on for, you know, so many years. But there's also been a spiritual evolution. You know, 200 years ago, we didn't have the Human Rights Declaration, the Declaration of Human Rights. And, you know, we didn't have the United Nations with, it's for all its problems, it has noble values, and we're a better world with the UN than without it. There is pressure to not be that kind of way anymore. And it's this old doing things that is combating with this new way.
It's interesting because I mean, when you talk about the kind of the steps forward, because I struggle with this, you know, this sort of the idea of the improving force of history. I mean, I've read things like Hans Rosling's Factfulness, and, you know, and I buy the fact that there are good things that happen. So it's not a zero sum argument. But I suppose when I was younger, I was very much on this idea that the basic curve moves upwards. But now I struggle with it. I struggle with it in a way that I certainly didn't when I was younger. And one of the things when I was reading about Reboot the Future was this idea about being good ancestors to future generations. I really love the kind of the mental picture of that, because I'm not sure how our ancestors stack up as the onward journey in terms of, are we as good as we should be? And I think this is part of the struggle, isn't it, in terms of how we feel about the world right now and where it could and should be.
Well, I think the very fact that we're asking this question, are we being good ancestors, gives hope, because we aren't, but we are asking the question and we're striving to understand better how to behave and how to think long term. We are human. We are still living in this material world. I always think of us all living on a spectrum. On one side is the really monster, horrible person who feels no love at all. I don't believe there's as evil as some people are. I don't believe anybody is completely 100%. Then you've got the ones way on the other side that have reached nirvana. I mean, if they really have reached nirvana, they're probably not here in a physical body anymore. So we're all on this spectrum.
Mm.
And we have a choice every day. Where are we going to be on that spectrum? We have a choice every day. Are we going to be the helpful person or the hurtful person? Are we going to be the one who shouts and screams, or are we going to want to be the one that speaks junk?
I love that. We do have the choice, right?
Are we going to be the intolerant one or the tolerant one? Are we going to be the selfish one or the generous one? Are we going to be the arrogant one? Are we going to be the humble one who you know, wants to embrace everybody and make everyone successful rather than...
It's funny when you say that. I interviewed Terry Waite a while back, and he was talking about his captivity, which was that in the end, he spent 23 out of 24 hours chained to a wall, but he still saw life as a choice in terms of how his spirit would respond to that. And I think that's very much on that. I mean, you've been doing your own series of conversations though as well, called Good After COVID-19. And I suppose this, you know, the pandemic has been a major moment in the recent story of the planet. Some hope that it will herald the Great Reset, that things will be very different. And I suppose it'd be interesting to sort of get your views about what this particular moment has done to deliver the compassionate, equitable and sustainable future that I know you want to campaign for.
Yeah, well, it's great that you mentioned those conversations, Good After COVID. I had referred to them earlier. So they were 9 conversations. We were really trying to capture at that moment what people were reflecting. It was just an exceptional time for the world to be reflecting on how we really want to be and what are our values and what have we created here to come to this point. And so what we're doing now as a result of those conversations, we've captured these lessons. Our next book is preserving these lessons, and we've created as a result of these discussions a kind of a manifesto that has 10 values. We call it values for a life economy, and by a life economy we mean a whole economic, social governance system that really promotes all of life. And so there are 10 principles, and it's really a fuller explanation of the golden rule. So that's coming out in May. And that's capturing these lessons.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we could go through the 10, but if you were to, well, I don't think we've got time for it, but if you were to sort of give a taste of though, into, because, you know, it's interesting because you're right. I mean, it's a major moment in the human experience. I think a lot of people worry that our memory will be very short-lived, and that actually it will be more of a return than a reset. If you were to sort of give a thought about how you see what comes next from this experience, what out of those 10, what would you share, do you think?
Well, so it's the very, very first one is love each other. That's really the starting point. And then we go to loving the earth. We go to empowering youth, changing the educational system to be more inclusive and more empowering, less competitive, more connected to the communities. Then we talk of, one is about the life economy, producing a life economy where our economy is not extractive and exploitative, but is having all life thrive. So it's that kind of thing. And then, of course, working in partnership, collaboration was just a common theme that came out in all of these conversations. It's not about me, me, me. It's about us doing things together. We'll get to better solutions that that persist and help more people.
Well, let's move to your quote for life and tip for life to sort of lead out of the interview. I'm happy to read them out, because you've got them in front of you, but I,
no, do
you
I
want,
don't.
No, okay, right. Well, so your quote for life was, let's do them one at a time, but to work things out in a conflict, understand there is not one truth, find what you have in common, and don't make judgments. That seems pretty wise advice to me.
Well, it's actually an advice I heard from in a speech from a negotiator that works for the UN. And he gave that advice, and I wrote it down at the time, and I put it on on my wall by my desk, and I think it, you know, we're, this whole judgment thing is really crucial to understand. We are taught to judge all the time. We have to know right from wrong. We have to choose the right partner. We have to get the right job. We have to hire the right people. You know, you have to pick the right food. It's just constantly we're making judgments. But you know, a lot of times we don't need to make judgments. No, I don't need to judge you how nicely you're asking the questions. You know, we're just having a good time here. I don't need to judge why someone believes that or says that or whatever. We are all who we are.
That's so interesting. I love that because you're right. You know, judgment is what puts you on edge. Judgment is what, you know, as you say, like the circularity of a good conversation is not about the judgment of how well is the interview going. It's, well, you know, I suppose the only judgment is, am I enjoying myself?
Yeah, but we just, you know, it just gets in the way of our own peace because we become intolerant. We are really critical, you know, and some people are just do that all the time. And they're constantly judging other people. They're cynical. You know, what's your choice? Are you really happy being a cynical person?
Or
would you rather be the one that's radiating happiness and making other people happy? I don't know. It's a choice that I make.
I once heard the idea of the cynic described as the energy vampire, that actually it just sucks the goodness out of the room, sucks the sort of like the optimism and positivity. I mean, let's finish, Kim, on your tip for life, because alas, we're running out of time. I wish we could go on, but you said get a sense of the infinitude of love, which is a resource for more patience, forgiveness, gratitude, generosity, and kindness for others and for all life. Your final thoughts, Kim?
Yeah, I just have this sense of love as being this infinite source. I tapped in a lot when I was raising my small children, and I needed to find more patience. I needed to find new ways of speaking to them. And I just opened up my thought to love. I just wanted to express love. And I feel like, you know, once you open your thought, you get more, you're more creative, you're more patient, you're more tolerant. You do find the right words. I know some, not everybody has that sense of the infinitude of love, but it's a really powerful feeling for me, something that I appreciate very much.
Kim Pullman, what a special person you are. Thank you so much for joining me on Changemakers.
Well, thank you, Michael, for having me. I've had a great time.
Changemakers is brought to you by the campaigns firm Seven Hills and presented by me, Michael Heyman. Pure Being is the name of our soundtrack, and it's written and performed by the brilliant BT Wolf. To find out more, head over to changemakers.works, and if you like what you hear, why not give us a rating?